Money and markets. We're really seeing a lot of the different markets back down as we approach summer. Let me just run through the roll call. And, of course, real talk and concern about what happens when interest rates start to rise. So we're really seeing softness. Again, we are significantly overdue for a 10 to 25% correction in the equity markets. And I think one of the big questions is, will we get that this year? S&P now up 2.7% for the year. The DAX now up 17%. China leading the way, up 19%. Lots of commentary in the press to make you think China's on the verge of collapse. And I think that's part of the U.S. folks sort of jawboning in response to the market. But again, PE is much, much lower in China and the emerging markets. And I think that's one of the reasons we're just seeing the divergence close a little bit that's happened as the U.S. market shot ahead for the last 3 years. Developed markets minus North America now up 11% for the year. Emerging markets still up 4%. If interest rates do go up and the dollar goes higher, we could really see emerging markets get hammered, particularly the ones with U.S. dollar debt. U.S. dollar index hit 97 and is now back down to 95 as yields have started to sneak up a little bit. The bond market now, the AGG, the ETF bond aggregate, off 1.2% down for the year. And TLT down 6.7% for the year. That's a big drop after a strong year last year. Gold is now flat for the year. Silver up 5% for the year. Oil had a good week. Was up about 4.7% over the last 5 days, but it's down 2.3% for the year. So just a lot of softness coming into the summer, and I don't think that necessarily means anything. To be expected. Healthcare article from the Wall Street Journal, and I have to say you heard it on the Salieri report. I told you this was going to happen, and sure enough it is. Let me just read it. Health insurers seek hefty rate boosts. Major insurers in some states propose substantial rate increases for plans sold under the federal health law, setting the stage for an intense debate over the law's impact. In New Mexico, market leader Healthcare Service Corps is asking for an average jump of 51.6% in premiums for 2016. The biggest insurer in Tennessee, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee, has requested an average 36% increase. Maryland market leader CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield wants to raise rates 30.4% across its products. Moda Health, largest insurer on the Oregon Health Exchange, seeks an average boost of 25%. All of them cite high medical costs incurred by people newly enrolled under the Affordable Care Act. This is one of the reasons I have certainly never signed up for for Obamacare. I don't think the system will ever work. I think the result is you're going to get coverage, but not health care. And our option is to spend our money on fresh food and health care, or we can spend it on insurance and run the risk that it will turn out not to be worth much. Another thing to keep an eye on, I posted a link from Charles Smith's blog. He posted some very good Federal Reserve statistics. U.S. retail is clearly struggling. I think Smith would describe it as collapsing, but there's clearly a big dip down, which is disturbing coming into summer. You would expect sort of a little pickup in the spring, but it'll be interesting to see how things go between now and fall. We keep hearing the Fed say they expect the economy to pick up, but with retail collapsing like this, I'm not sure how it happens. I believe Obamacare was a big contributor to that collapse, and the lower gas prices are not enough to offset it. Another commentary that I wrote, real estate juicing the U.S. housing market. The administration is making very significant strides on injecting a fair amount of credit and money into the U.S. housing market, trying to build a flow. And given how much money may come out of the bond market, it wouldn't be surprising to me if they can do it. But the reason I keep pounding the pavement on this topic is if you are in a community where 3.0 money is going in, then that's a tremendous amount of support for a stronger housing market in those areas. And I want to make sure if you're looking to buy a home, you don't get shut out. So please take a look at that commentary and pay attention. If you're in a market that's not the beneficiary of the 3.0 money, you probably don't have to worry. If we get increases, it probably won't be significant. So there's tremendous divergence market to market. But again, if you're in an area getting lots of 3.0 reinvestment, you need to pay attention if you want to make sure you don't get shut out. I also posted, Mary Meeker is a partner at Kleiner Perkins and every year does an analysis of internet trends. I always post her commentary, which I think is a very excellent overview of the internet and what the impact is in a variety of different ways in the economy. Let me just give you some of the statistics from that. Meeker sets the stage by saying two-thirds of a generation into the internet. There are about 2.8 billion users as of 2014. That's up from 35 million in 1995. In 20 years, that's a 39% of the world's population moving in to the internet usage. Then she also points out 5.2 billion mobile phone users. That's up from 80 million in 1995. And that's 73% of the population versus 1% in 1995. She says the market cap of the top 15 companies providing services and using the internet and mobile phones have gone from a valuation of 17 billion to over 2.5 trillion. That is very significant given that the entire global equity markets are $70 trillion. And I think it's important, and it really helps to look at Meeker's presentation. You understand the power of this platform when all 7 billion are on it, because there's so many functions. Once you get 100% access in a country or globally, then there's all sorts of functions that can go and work through that medium that can't now. One of the things Meeker points out is that education, the impact on government and education has just begun. I agree with that. And as those things kick in, we're going to start to see a lot of very significant change in those sectors. And for those of us who are entrepreneurs, there's a lot of opportunity. So one of the things we talked a lot about in the Sydney speech was what happens to education when people start making the decision that the certificate doesn't matter anymore. It's the authentic education that matters. And when will that happen? How will that happen? And I think it's going to happen. And when that wall comes down, you're going to see extraordinary shifts in how education happens. A couple things going on in the precious metals world that I want to underscore to you. Texas has a new depository, and Franklin Sanders sent out an email. He sat down and looked at the legislation and really unpacked it. And I thought it was pretty interesting, and that's up on the blog. Texas is a very unique state. It has a lot of infrastructure so that it can go its own way if it has to. I find it very interesting that they're creating that depository. BitGold bought Gold Money. I know there are a fair amount of subscribers over the years who've been exposed to Gold Money or put money at Gold Money. Bitcoin Gold is buying Gold Money. Bullion Vault got a hold through the merger process of Gold Money's financials and did an analysis, which I think is worth reading. I put it up on the blog. I think there are real questions about how Gold Money is going to fare as a result of the merger. Anyway, if you're at Gold Money, I would encourage you to take a look at that post. Then finally, we will post a link from Zero Hedge. Greenspan, Dick Fisher, and Larry Lindsay did a discussion of what happens when interest rates start to rise. And you almost... I was stunned at the cluelessness of the participants. You almost can't believe they're that divorced from reality, but I'm afraid they are. They tried to blame our financial situation on contingent liabilities and retirement obligations like Social Security, which is astonishing. They think somehow we don't know that, you know, $40 trillion plus has just been stolen. Apparently, it wasn't hard to give the banks $27 trillion. And the theory that the problem is the entitlements is simply flies in the face of the facts and reality that the American people now understand as a result of the bailouts. So that spin was very clever in being pushed in 2007. But post-ballots, I just don't even begin to see how that's going to work. So I've rarely seen a better example of the hubris bubble of the U.S. leadership. It's kind of frightening.